finished it about midnight last night.
Thank you for your hard work, but you put my name on there. Yeah, buddy, I also tried
that. Yes.
I think you are, the kids are not kind of fun.
Morning, voters here.
Hello.
They are not the same.
Can you hear me?
If we use a different RC.
Yes.
Because the RC is different.
We have a few people here and copy and apple.
What's the number?
I think the kids.
Hello?
It's not easy to find this office.
Yeah. It's a different room, so if people are having a little bit of difficulty in finding the room. Here is Ron and Rumpa, David Grove, and Haibin San, and Yoshia Hisato, and Tom Christie is here. And I expect Jack will come soon. And a few more. Tonju will be late today.
We should look and see what the fitting box, in the printout, it defines what the fitting box, not your numbers. The numbers in GSI.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Because A.
Yeah, but it also tells you what the fitting box number is. No, sorry, what the distance is. You know how we define, the box size.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about the number observation getting into the system?
The number of observations getting into the system.
Right.
That's not same in terms of ANA.log.
Well, another thing in the ANA.log, another thing that's printed out there is the size of the thing box, I think. So if you check that even the time.
I did. So what do you want to
see? Remember, are those defined differently or are they the same?
Defined differently.
Okay.
Actually, took out the number.
Okay, they are defined differently too.
They are different, but they're not too big. For example, this is a previous one, and this is our current version. So you see, they do not change.
Right. Although you have to square it to see.
Yeah, I know. But at least they are not same. Right.
Hello?
Yeah. Right. I'm sure A is big. It's a small.
Let's see this difference between these two.
You're busy, huh?
No, same.
M sway.
No.
Oh, M sway. I'm confused.
Exactly same. I mean, that means current box.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything different?
No, nothing different.
All of them same.
Exactly same.
So,
what
do you want
to answer? So, I think the key accent yesterday, or the day before yesterday.
Okay, so the number is the same.
So
the number that comes in.
Yeah, if you look at it.
The number that comes in, not the number accepted, but the number in terms of. But the number thin should be the same. Because it should just depend on. I'm saying they're different. Because it only depends on the thinning box size.
Maybe we can.
So I just start going through the agenda. I hope everybody got managed to call here. So we have meeting today, and the next meeting December 4th in room 209. That's mainly focused on dopamine LiDAR simulation. I hope KNMI is going to be able to call dial in. Today, Dave Emitz in trouble, but he's coming. And,
who?
Dave Emitz.
Oh, yeah.
Simpson Weather is coming. I hope we can get some input from NASA. NASA means Matt McGill or Arindo. I haven't heard of them. So that would be nice. Some plan. Or other people from Cyber, from Genia. She's trying to do something. So I don't know what's. They are very keen, but I don't know what they are keen. So we want to coordinate. They are not fighting, so in that case, you have to help each other. And Simpson Weather is hoping to use your code. You mean Ron Erico's code. They can, if they can start from that code, that will be good. They are trying to use whatever variable. But, so. So today, I just go through agenda is my things, and Ron is going to give a talk, then Yang Fu and Nikki did some run, so they will present some talk. And we, so I using Ron Erico's, and Yu-chan and Mo-chan Wei joined, and Russ Peter joined. I think you have a good seat here. Ah, the coffee is far away.
Is that a good seat?
No.
So, it may not be. It's a seat, right?
Yeah, there's a few simulation code for Radiance set. That one is Ron Erico produced, and Hybing is still maintains that code which can use SALTA. So that's in, CRTM group is interested in the one. Interested in compare. And Tonju is still doing just for checking. They keep doing that Jack the night profile. Because my. So
hello, Michiko, this is Oeste.
Hello, good, you call in. I'm just going through the agenda. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So. I got to Ron's code, and I managed to simulate airs and hers for whole year. I just did it whole year, but no error. But I assume you found bug, right? So I have to redo it.
Well, you're going to have to redo all the stuff you just did, too, because yeah. It's all wrong.
Yeah. But all wrong, but I
mean, it's all not but, tuned. The tuning parameters will all have different. There's okay. No reason to generate the to do that. There's no yeah. Absolutely no reason to
but
do that.
But I appreciate you released it so I can work on that script. So now my script can produce as fast as one day. I can assimilate whole radiance data in one day. So I change the script and that kind of thing.
You can simulate what in one day?
Airs, hertz, probably M's in one day.
For how long a period?
1 year.
Wow, really? How do you do that with the airs? It takes us.
How many channels?
It takes us half an hour on one processor. Cause it's
but
code,
I can just
use
62 processor.
Oh, she's running.
It's at least
a straightforward parallelizer.
Yeah, it's a very. Well,
yeah, okay,
parallel.
Yeah,
62
no.
The top, the level, vertical level of Ann's peer is different. So in that case, you need to treat a different sequence.
No. She's running.
Without
she's running separate jobs on separate processors.
So
you know,
62 parallel job.
How do you deal with the CRT?
Ron. You know how you run it, right? Mm-hmm. And you sit and you run a job on the processor. Well, she is running that job, and then she goes to another processor, runs an entirely different script on the other processor. That's what she's doing.
So one day means. In each stream, I process like 3 days or something.
Okay.
That's all. So yeah. That's how I made it more flexible.
Okay.
So each batch job submit just one period, but that's continually submitted
question,
for 3 days.
The talk was asking how many channels.
281 or whatever.
Oh, okay, 281. Okay.
So
it's still pretty impressive.
It's fast.
And it is fast.
And then bottleneck is I have to even for bad grip code nature has to be in a disk. That's if that
well,
causes a problem.
So you
that,
have
that's
to have the whole nature one available online.
That's right.
One of the things it
maybe show some separate data and the plot to see whether it's related to the cloud.
But you're simulating clear, aren't you?
Your code.
Well, it's a script that you build around.
It's more complicated than
Ron's code.
I run the Ron code.
Yeah. Okay.
Then, and I managed to run the AIRS and HERS, but the MS, I got in trouble. It's not the code for simulation code. It's more like finding the data, right? Probably it's very simple things, but I
it's
just...
It's finding the location of the observations, or what?
No, just the instrument type and the sorting, and the, somehow instrument type become zero somewhere, and I don't know why, and just silly things.
Okay. Tom, one of the reasons it's a lot faster, there's data thinning applied. We thin... Oh. We thin to, and I don't know what the operational system is now at NSEP, but we've been, and I don't know what she's thinning to, we thin now to 70-kilometer boxes.
So you're not simulating all the observations, you assimilated what will be assimilated.
No, we assimilate a subset that is bigger than what will be assimilated.
So it's in between.
It's in between.
Okay.
Because...
Yes, especially because you can gain a lot of that over the poles, because there's so much redundancy on that.
Because otherwise... I mean, we do a lot of extra computation work, which then is just thrown out. So we wanted to take like 1 out of 5 rather than 1 out of 100.
But if you were to play around with things in different ways, you could simulate all of them, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, you can simulate just a matter of computation.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So current simulation, current thinning, it's. 45 minutes or something. So it's length of take with how to spread the data. I made it flexible. And also another thing I did it is from grip to binary and save the binary. I just delete each time step. So that's very fast process. So I created in each directory. So that avoids some confusion. And I thought about it reading grip code directory from the simulator, but it's more like a cosmetic problem, so it may not be necessary.
So you do it in the script rather than combining it with the code?
It could be okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay.
But so she recreates, so those files that you make, Wenhua, those intermediary files you make from the nature run.
Yeah.
What she does is she makes them on the fly and then throws them out when she's done.
Yeah, and I do it each time that I open up a new directory. It won't interfere with other job. That's what I did. So that way it's very fast.
The question is, did you check some sample data.
We have to do that. Yeah.
You simulate it also because that part is important.
Yeah,
had some problem before.
Yeah, we did before. So what I did is I wrote a script, but I have no idea that data is good or garbage.
Well, yeah.
So I asked.
I've
already advised you on how to check that. So
yeah, here. So that's kind of things
crispy
told me to help.
Check your simulations against the observations.
Mm-hmm. That's what we did.
Yeah.
Against what observation? Real ones?
Real ones.
Real ones? No.
No.
May 1st.
On the first day
of the nature run.
Yeah, the first day, considering that's the initial condition for the nature run.
Yeah, we're starting from that. What we do...
It should have real happens,
but you can't do it after.
You can't do it after.
No, but there's other things.
Yeah, other things you can do.
They're also very simple.
That's true. It's a sanity check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the first thing,
like RMS unit or something.
I mean, we check at something that's even better than that in some ways because we're using the CRTM. We're using the same model in both cases, not exactly the same version. So what we do an analysis step.
Using the nature run as a background.
Using the nature run as a background, and that also
same difference almost. Yeah.
That tells you what represents, and we get, you know...
It tells you your CRTM gets the same result.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's two different clouds.
It's two different versions, so if you made a mistake, you're not making the same mistake twice. Hopefully.
We might get
it also
results
gives,
just yeah. because of that, though. Yeah.
Well, but yeah. It also gives you an indication of what the representative's error is. So that's
this
a very
is
valid.
Once you get going here, could you speak closer to the speakerphone?
Okay.
I'm having trouble understanding.
Okay.
Yeah, we are going, actually, already, Tom. So.
You are?
Yeah.
Well, we didn't start the talk yet, my talk. Should we do that?
No, that
are we ready to go there?
Yeah. So, and other thing is, I created a joint also photo gallery, and I just wanted to, I just, before I forget
that. It's a picture of an Austin group.
And
if you're...
So there are many people who appeared in, who related to Ose and this kind of thing. This is Carla Cardinale and myself. So
where's that from?
That's Sopex meeting.
Ah.
So John Ayer.
Jean Payeux.
Yeah. You know better than well, but these people spoke up about for Ose, you know.
Yeah,
so this is a bunch of people, like Champagne, same people, and Florence Labille, and I think Russ Peter can put the name here. I haven't put the name here. So this is Marjugunda, he's also in an email list. Mm-hmm. He was interested, showed an interest. And that is on the right, and this is DSC-01346, that is Enomoto. He's working at simulating center. He's interested in producing nature now. The next person is Opuchi. So next slide is, again, just a bunch of people who might get involved in OSE, like Majugunda, and that one is... I don't think Tom Hamill, he might. He did some simple process. That, and just Chris Thorncroft in 1352, he's interested in evaluating nature and he might start working. As Oreste has done some work, he will continue some work.
Okay.
So just this is Nakazawa-san, he might be getting interested. This is Richard Swinburne.
Michiko, we cannot hear you here very well. Can you speak louder?
Okay. I don't know. I can hear you very well.
Okay. And
this is, he's...
Turn
up the
volume.
Yeah,
I
did.
That may be their volume.
Yeah, could you turn up your volume side?
I think it's at the maximum.
Okay.
All right.
I'll try. So.
Yeah.
So he's also showing the interest, this guy. I forgot.
Ross
Peterson. Yes, he's a... So,
come on, Prairie.
Yeah, he's also... He asked me to put his in an email list. So that's... 89, and so yeah, 40, and Cara and Florence Labille, she cite author paper, and she want to be informed. That's again Enomoto-san. I don't want to go through too much. 97, second from the right is Gatian Masere. I thought he's very, very tall and giant. But there are taller person in Holland. It's amazing. I think I don't want to spend too much time, so I'll just go to the thumbnail. And towards the end, then we go to a bunch of people, and Adrian Chimond, he helped us to approve Eric to produce Nature Run. So he did help, and there are a bunch of people from these are the second from the bottom line. They are for Simpson Weather, their office. And the second from the last slide is Japanese people. See, he's from the left, third from the left is Miyoshi. He's coming to University of Maryland.
Okay.
I'm trying to win.
He goes on.
He finished PhD in 2 years. So I don't want to get in too much for this one. Then I will pass this book to, well, maybe I should go. And there is some progress in Nature joint also. That Lydia presented radio occultation of the also for radio occultation observation, and some Georgia was trying to do something, and Environment Canada and Northrop Grumman, they have already downloaded the data and they agreed to follow our guideline starting from model resolution data. They are talking to Alindo about data transfer right now. And ITT is getting interest. And JPL is getting interest, but and the guy I was talking to, he said it's a very big battle to convince people not to do the quick course.
So your JPL contact is John Lavery's?
The guy who came a few months ago.
Yeah, John Lambert.
He said he wanted me to come.
The guy who presented the geo microwave.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
So he said it's going to be a big battle.
Quick. It's quick. Funny.
These people just say, like, quick. So he understand quick was not good, but it's going
no,
to be
no, they don't hard. Understand. If they understood, then they would never say anything, even mention the word.
Well, they're an engineering shop, basically, and they need something to justify their missions, but they don't have modeling and data simulation experience, really.
Well, that's a matter. It doesn't matter. That's an excuse.
What I'm presenting, okay, run this job, so now this is the proper OSA is the quickest. That's the only way I can approach
them. I mean, OSSEs have such... The first thing we have to do when we're interested in OSSEs is battle all the people who are knowledgeable and who think they're garbage, because what's been done is garbage. The people who do an OSSE by taking out all the observations and just doing a single thing, right? And it gets published, and then they're at the AMS and everything else and giving their stuff, and then everybody wants to copy what they're doing and says all these great things about their data, which has a wonderful impact, right? Because they're comparing against nothing. You know, all these other people, they have put in observations that have no errors and all this kind of stuff. Or all these things. And people promoting it.
But it's actually, it's better for... for us and for the community as a whole, if we collaborate with people like you are, because otherwise they're going to go off and do something
else.
Anyway.
It's a matter of educating. It's a matter of educating them, and if they have, but they also have to also realize, you know, when NASA went to the moon, what they didn't do was put a big firecracker and tie a guy to it. and then say, oh, that didn't work. Oh, that's the only thing we thought of right now. They did it step by step, because that's what you have to do when you want to go to the moon. When you want to do an OSSE, you have to go step by step. If you try to skip all the steps, what you get is the big firecracker.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the truth.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily true that there are other ways of doing it, but what you have to do is make the case. It's a scientific problem. You have to make the case, and an engineering problem. You've got to make the case that the bridge is going to stand up.
Well, these are all thought problems. I mean, you need to organize your pieces in order to help you do your thinking, whatever your thinking is. Whatever questions you want to answer, you set up an experiment to answer.
So what you have to also think about, okay, I set this up now. How can I misinterpret what I've done because of some mistake?
Well, that's all part of thinking,
science.
Right?
I know, but a lot of people skip that step. That no see a point step.
A lot of people don't think at all. So,
So you be ready?
Yeah. Okay, now we will go to Ron Errico's slide.
Yeah.
It said Errico something.
We'll slide the mic over.
And
Slide
view. So this is a status report of the work that Renoir and I have done during the past about month. For some of you, it may be what we've done for the last 2-3 months. Some of the work has been delayed because we migrated from one machine to another. And so when we ported over all the GSI codes, they didn't work on the new machine. The scripts didn't work because of the way mass store is done and things like that. So it took a while. People on vacation who know those scripts and all this kind of stuff. So the natural things, it's just poor timing on our part to have that happen, that transition happen just when we're trying to get stuff done. And also, there's lots of people who have helped a lot to this project. Nita has helped me with all the buffer stuff. Emily Liu has helped with some of the CRTM and Radiance, looking at Radiances. Although we still want to pull both of those people in even more. They haven't had a chance, for instance, to look at the recent results. Ricardo Todling and Ron Gelaro. With the GSI, Joanna Joyner with the basic idea of how to put the cloud effects in some simple way. And then people here who've helped with porting the CRTM to Renoir so she can do her work, and Michelle for supporting all this work. Okay. Before I mention this, I'll say completed software. We've just we completed what I call version 2, P2, which is prototype 2. And that includes three basic sets of software. One is for generating conventional observations. That's observations that are used by GSI that are in the prep buffer file. And we're not using any of the precip related stuff. So the GOSAR precip estimates, we're not using that.
Or probably the GOS soundings.
Or the GOSAR soundings, yeah. Right. We're not using them. Let's see, then software for simulating radiances, and that includes HERS 2 and 3, MSU-A and B, AIRS and MSU. And software for generating random observation errors. And actually, that includes something to put in correlated errors in the vertical in the case of Raywin signs. Let's see.
What are you using for the satellite instruments for the observational error? Are you just using nominal values?
Let's see. For the observation errors, they are uncorrelated at this point. Between channel or between one location and another, and no bias is put in, and for that reason we remove the bias removal because we don't have sources of bias. We don't have the same kind of sources of bias like real observations have. And we don't have as much of a need because we're using a CRTM in both cases. The bias is a lot less. Right, so we don't do a bias removal because we don't have most of the sources of bias.
Well, you get bias maybe from the background or something.
No, that's different. The assumption in it's true there are sources of bias, but the assumption in if you put in a bias in the observations and you put it in a way that's a simple way, the GSI would detect that. The GSI algorithm is sophisticated enough it would detect that and remove it. So rather than bothering with all that, we just don't put it in, and we don't run the bias removal. If you're interested in looking at bias, then you have to start thinking about what kind of bias model you want to use and how you want to combine it with the GSI bias removal, et cetera, et cetera. So we ignore that. But I didn't answer your question. What we do is, the way we add error for all the instruments, we have a tunable factor that depends on sort of instrument type, and then we have the lookup tables that the GSI uses for the value of R, which is the
error matrix.
Well, it's representative plus instrument error variance. We take the standard deviation associated with that R, and we multiply it times this other factor, because there are other sources of representative error that are going on. And so we use that at this point, but we also realize that that may not be the proper number to use. We may get, and I'll show you an example. We don't get the right kind of results, and so there, it's tunable based on that. And then if you want to get more refined and change, well, I want to use for different channels, I want to use a different inflation factor or deflation factor, then you have to go in and actually into the tables at this point and change those tables.
Have you thought
so
of
that's how it works at this point.
Using the actual, well, for part of it, for the instrument part, the actual ND delta T,
the what?
The actual instrument noise.
Well,
for that part of it, but because for the HERS, there's a fair amount of interchannel correlation.
Yeah. What we're doing here is we're trying to produce within a year, right, a simulated observation data set that produces better results, significantly better results than the previous OSSI. So there's all kinds of issues, and to address all these other issues, I mean, there's all kinds of things I could list that we could do better. The problem is each would take attention and each would take expertise, and either we would need cooperation from somebody, right, at a level of real commitment. Okay, I'm going to sit down with you. We're going to work through this, right? Or we would need, you know, or we would have to take the time to learn the stuff enough to do the thing. So it's just a matter of time what's missing. But there are, and also there's the representativeness issue. I'm more concerned, actually, with the fact that we have the real atmosphere. In the case of real data simulation, you have the real atmosphere with the real surface, the real physics. And in the other case, we have the CRTM. Oh, and you have real clouds, right? In the other case, we have the CRTM. So there's, now we have instead two versions of the CRTM, or maybe even almost the same version. I don't know how different they are. So the representative's error is a big issue. For instance, right now we're using perhaps identical surface emissivity models. Depends how different the versions are that we have in the different versions of CRTM. Well, I mean, I presume that over land, that the surface emissivity models are not perfect, whereas we have a perfect emissivity. Yeah. So the point is there's so many sources of error that really, and so at this point, what we have is a simple tuning thing. Okay, we start with some nominal values. We say, okay, these are too big or too small, you know, in terms of some statistics that they give us, so let's change them by a certain amount. And that's all we're doing at this point as a tuning exercise. But ideally, it would be better to go in and do more realistically for each observation type. And we'd love at some point in the near future to have that kind of collaboration. But it really would take the collaboration, because it takes the understanding to do something that's reasonable and realistic. And I have the same problem with the Raywinson's. I know, like, Jack put more effort into the Raywinson stuff, as far as I know, than I have.
Well,
here.
Not representative error. I mean, we just...
No, but...
Basically...
But, put, well... With, but certain things...
Otherwise, it's pretty similar.
You know, I have no idea how to deal with representative error. I'm an instrument guy, so, you know, I have a good feel for the actual instrument noise itself. So...
With the satellites, I don't know how big the representative's error is compared to the instrument stuff. If the instrument stuff is really tiny compared to the representative's, it may not be a big deal. But
the instrument stuff, you can actually measure that, and if you want to do a simulation with fidelity, you can put
It'd be nice if it's correlated. Yeah. I mean, first question a lot of people are going to ask is about correlated errors. You know,
For the microwave instruments, they're essentially uncorrelated. I've looked at the HERS, and I've seen correlations as high as 0.6. The channels.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised. I'd be surprised if it wasn't. I don't know what would make... I don't understand why one channel goes either on an instrument. It's kind of interesting, right? How sometimes one channel gets messed up.
Oh, if it's separate detector elements, it depends on how the instrument is constructed. If the channels are falling on separate detector elements, they can... One can go bad without...
Without any others being affected. Well, anyway, to go on. So there's a lot of more work that could be done, and we're welcome to any kind of collaboration. you know, after the end of this year, because we'll show you, we hope to be finished with this phase, the prototype phase, at the end of this year, and then we could build on that.
I have a question. I'm just, I have no experience in ASIC. So this software is supposed to work for any later run? I suppose
we can't hear anything. Can you speak louder?
Yeah, he's asking if it will, if the software will work for any nature run.
Any response?
I think as long as it's a Latlon grid, but also if it's a, if it's extremely high resolution, then we may bump into memory issues. So right now,
well, except to you have to have the right quantities. I mean, you expect certain things from the background to be there.
Yeah.
And then you suppose later on you choose, shouldn't you suppose assign those errors as zero or not? Well, I'm maybe not being
aggressive. No. The
you're converting from later
no,
on,
what you need,
supposed to be choose.
Well, no.
An observation.
No, because real observation.
You don't want perfect observation. You want to add error.
Okay.
Real observations have error, and there's two sources. There's two kinds of error. There's representative error, which has to do with the difference between the assimilation system and the real system.
Okay.
The problem is, the European Center model in the, you know, it's different. For instance, you know, in the real atmosphere, you have infinite scales, right? It's continuum, sort of. In the
you don't have an infinite ability to measure them.
But yeah, no. But do you have an infinite? You have more sources of error in terms of more scales unobserved.
We have more scales of reality than the model can represent.
And so anyway, there's a difference in representativeness error between the two systems.
Okay.
Now, for instance, both are using some kind of bilinear interpolation, right? So that, you know, the sort anyway, there's the sources of error are different. So you have to compensate. If you want to get results that look like real results, that's the difference. If you want to get results that look like real results, then you have to make, you have to adapt these observations to make them look as though they're, well, to give you the same kind of statistics. So there's a tuning process that you have to do. That's basic. Okay, so let me go on. And let's see, GSI buffer format, there are tunable parameters in the software. The software is fairly adaptable, and also there's about 45 pages of documentation at this point. Okay, experiments. We've only been looking at January 2006. To do this, we've had a startup from December 1st, and then also in the second experiment, which we just concluded December 15th. Let's see, it uses the GSI system, 6-hour periods. Right now, because, you know, this is the development work still, rather than production in a sense, so we're doing it at 2-degree Latlon. So that's like T63. 72 levels, and the top is at 1 hectopascal. Oh, no, 1 pascal. Conventional obs include what we use in our operational system, excluding a few observations that have lesser impacts. So in particular, VAOBS aircraft, the profiler winds, VAD winds, surface stations, QuickSCAT, and SSMI surface winds, SAT winds. And I think it's, I'm not sure of these numbers because I'd have to check, I haven't had time to check with Renoir exactly what these numbers are. It looks like approximately 1.4 million a day. And the radiances include all those instruments listed, about 3 million a day. That's channel times location. And that's after data fitting. So this is not, by the way, those are not the numbers for the satellites that are read in. That's the number actually used after quality control and after data thinning. Okay, the first experiment was done with no MSU. It's a minor difference. But the second experiment then, we corrected several problems that we observed in the first experiment. And we also tried another attempt at tuning, which actually wasn't very successful. Let's see. So this is... one of the things that motivated us, this is from Michiko's experiment back done about, I don't know, 3-4 years ago. Standard deviation of the analysis increment for the U wind, This is with her T170L42 resolution, including satellite data.
This is for a whole month or something?
This is a whole month. Well, that time, the old one, it was only a month, remember? In fact, it's only 3 weeks, I think, right? Because I think you throw out, it was like a...
No, it was a month total. And, a week's and a...
Yeah, so, you, so it's 3 weeks.
You average this is actually, 3 weeks of data.
This is actually like 21 days.
Yeah.
And what you can see here is the Aussie versus real in this case. And the color tables, let's see, in this case are identical. But one of the things you can see here is, like, in the northern hemisphere, the standard deviation of view, analysis increment means the difference between the background and analysis. So it's what the observations are doing, the net effect of the observations every...
And another way of looking at it is how bad the forecast is.
Well, how
much background. It needs to be correct.
That's like, so you can see here in the northern hemisphere, the real standard deviation is significantly larger than in the Aussie, and in the southern hemisphere, the opposite. In fact, you would think that these are maybe from two different seasons, but they're not. So one of the things we wanted to do was correct this kind of problem. And, you know, there was a lot of work that went into this. This is no criticism of the work. It's just, you know, that was the state of the art 3-4 years ago.
What do you think caused this to happen?
I don't know. Although, when we looked at this without the satellite radiances, there was more agreement. So with the satellite radiances, things were pushed out of agreement more.
So southern hemisphere...
So the satellite... Oh, I'm sorry,
Michiko. Southern hemisphere radiance is too good for the ocean.
It could be, yeah.
It made
the
southern hemisphere too good.
Yeah.
I mean, too bad, actually.
Okay.
More correction.
So, okay, so now here is our latest Aussie. Now, before I mention the, go through the...
I thought David has...
Oh, I was just going to ask, the bottom plot there, was just the operational... system, is that what that...
No, it was a control that was run with identical observations, basically, but from the real world.
Okay. It wasn't operational in the sense, this is 1993, so the observations that she did, that she was working on, were from 1993, but the version of GSI was SSI, actually.
Yeah.
And that was, so...
What was the resolution of the test at that time?
T-60. No, that was T-170. That was a T-170.
Okay.
Before I mention this, I need, so that you understand now, I'm going to show you some of the results. Let me say this. We've done two experiments, right? The first one was to sort of test everything. Well, I did testing of the codes independently of running the GSI. And then Renoir did some further tests that we were able to do on like single case stuff to make sure things can be read and stuff like that, and some other simple experiments. And then we said, okay, now let's actually run GSI. So we did that in like August or September, I think September maybe. She ran a month, and that was our first attempt, and I'm going to show you some of those results too. And you know, after that, we evaluated it very briefly. And we saw there were certain problems, and we were aware of certain things. We said, okay, let's fix this. Okay, we fixed a lot of things. Let's now make sure we haven't broken anything. And let's try running it, and let's try a retuning and see if we could tune better. And then we threw it all in with all these lots of little changes, and some big changes actually too. And those results just came out Monday, okay? So between Monday and yesterday at midnight is when I made these slides, we were able to make very minimal amount of pictures. You know, some of the first pictures we made weren't correct, you know, and they were suspicious, and Renoir had to go back and check things. I had to go and check things, make sure I was interpreting things right. So, in other words, we have not vetted all of this. So be careful about how you interpret anything I'm saying here. We could take that back in a week or two and say, oh, that was wrong. So, you know, you have to be careful about not being biased, but also you have to be careful, be aware that even Renoir hasn't seen these pictures, so I may say something that Renoir says, oh, that's not right or something. So, and the alternative was that I would say, okay, we're not going to show you guys anything until we're done, until we process everything, do all the checking that we think we should do and all that. And rather than waiting until then, because I know people are anxious to get stuff and to see how things are going, I'm showing you stuff now. Okay? So that's a...
Ron, do you want to say that the first thing we check is without the arrow added to the observation, we check that the impact. I think that's the impact.
One of the tests that we do, first test that we did, and we still continue to do this, that's with the background. We take the background from the nature run I described before. We take the background from the nature run. We take these simulated observations where we don't add any error and we have no clouds in them. And we pass that to the GSI, right? So GSI has to read this, do its data thinning, data selection, and then it runs it through the CRTM and it computes the fits with O minus F. In that case, they should be very similar, because it's just interpolations, and in the case of the satellites, maybe different versions of the CRTM. So there should be a lot of agreement. And so that's one check. And the numbers do come out very good, not perfect, because there are sources of problems.
Also, low resolution.
Yeah, the difference in resolution.
So the only difference between these two is one is used real observation, the other one used synthetic observation.
Yes, right.
You convert it from later on.
Well, there is a different software. Different scale.
What? Different scale? No.
Yeah.
What do you mean different scale?
Different scale.
Oh, yeah. Bigger. Yeah, you got to watch the numbers. Yeah. Because this is something, you know, it's going to take us a while to, you know, when we do this for real.
With different color,
right.
Meaning different things.
Right. In fact, that's why I say here, notice the color tables differ, but actually, they're very similar. Yeah. You look at this. So we don't have, for this 1 month, we don't have the same problem that the other 1 month had, right?
Yeah, so right now it's slide 5, right? Yeah, slide 5, because...
Okay, yeah, I don't know what number it is.
It's slide 5, I just checked.
Okay.
Now we're in slide 6.
So here's the mean of the analysis. Again, the color tables differ, but you know, if you look at it, the numbers are very similar. The patterns are sort of similar. They shouldn't be identical, by the way, because it's very different. One is a difference.
You can just difference the two, right? Show a plot of that.
I thought this picture yesterday at 3 o'clock.
Oh, I know.
It's
hard to tell exactly what we're looking at here.
Well, it's not that hard to tell. It's really not that hard to tell. These, you know, these are these greens.
It's hard
if you look
to
at this. And there's no reason why these should be the same. One involves a difference between the climatology of the European Center model and the NCEP. Well, in this case, our model, GEOS 5. And the other is a difference in the climatology between the real atmosphere.
Did you look at the GEOS comparison 5. Of the, you know, fits to the first guess? Because we found that was a powerful metric to look at.
We have not looked at that yet. We had looked at it in the first...
You mean O minus A?
O minus F.
You can look at O minus A too. I mean, they're.
Yeah, we did in the first.
What do you mean?
O minus F.
O minus a B.
Is mean. This is some kind of mean.
Yeah. Renoir. O minus F or the J naught scores.
The RMS difference of the observations in the fourth.
Yeah,
is the same
we did.
That's very important.
No, we did. We did in the first experiment. We did not in this experiment yet.
Okay. Well,
except as.
I would like to see
except.
Them.
Yeah, except Renoir has looked at that, you know, in terms of checking to see whether things look okay.
I think
the first version, they were very similar.
Yeah.
And the second version, the new OSI results are a little larger. I'm going to show you some evidence of that, actually. Mm. Okay, another thing we're using, instead of OSEs at this phase, in order to expedite the work, we're using this estimation of impacts of observations. And so I'll briefly review that. We have an energy metric, and it's just so that we can take all the dynamic fields and use a single number to say the quality of the forecast. So these are the errors now, in this case, of U and V and T and P. And it's just a way of summing them all, and you sum the squares and area weight them and weight them by the thickness of the sigma level. Okay. Now consider you have analysis, you have a background plus your common gain matrix, and this is the innovation, the observation information essentially is coming in, and your forecasts. And so we could look at the change in E between two forecasts. So we have a forecast run from the analysis, and you score that. So it's like using RMS, except it's not RMS, it's mean squared. There's no square root involved. And it's combining the winds and the temperatures in a rational way, okay? So we score the analysis forecast, and we...
here, the E is the function of our forecast field, but your definition of the first one is the function of... of wind errors.
No.
And all of the variables are supposed to be errors, not the field, not the whole field, right?
That's a fixed number. It depends what you mean by function. A function of the error is a function of the field. The error depends on the field, so it's a function.
If you look at the errors of the total energy
This is what you should look at. Mm-hmm. This is a metric of the error. Okay? And we're looking at the change in the error score between looking at the forecast from the analysis and the forecast from the background that are valid at the same time. Okay, so we see how much the observations that have gone into the analysis have reduced the one-day forecast error metric. That's how you interpret this. And then we developed this approximation using an adjoint technique. It's a third-order approximation to E, where we consider now all the different subsets of observations that we have, and we determine an approximation to E that tells us what the amount of this change is due to different subsets of observations. And so that is what I'm going to show now. And there's half a dozen papers on this. And you have an expert on this here, too.
I think you should be able to click just about anywhere.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. So this is from experiment one. We were very heartened by this result. So the top figure, okay, so what we did is we have this 1 month, and we have this score. Yangshu Zhu, right? She has done a lot of this work with Ron Gilaro.
That's pretty impressive.
So this is, you can see here, it is nice. There's a paper now that describes how to interpret this compared to how you interpret an OSI. That paper has just been finished by Ron Gilaro and Yangshu Zhu. So this shows the reduction in that forecast error metric due to using observations for how that reduces the error at day one. And
is that averaged over the weeks or whatever?
This is averaged. It's either averaged or sum, I forget what it is, but it's, over a month. Okay, in this case it's a month. And, you can see here, MSU-A, the Rayobs are very important, MSU-A is very important. you can see in our system we were having a problem with the SSMI wind speeds at this time. The GSI wasn't doing things right. You see there's a positive impact from QuickSCAT. The SAT winds in our system for some reason is low compared to like the impacts that the Navy gets. We don't know why exactly.
I think
Yes. I have a question.
Yeah.
Since you're using the energy as a metric, of course, you have basically a quadratic root of the error or of the impact with speed. So from this, it would be kind of suggesting that the most sensitive area would be the area of the jet stream, right, and also the height of the jet stream. So is there any way of weighting observations that are closer to the place where you have the higher winds?
You can break this up into any way you want. And even into each observation. You could look at, and Ron Gelaro has plots showing the impacts of every observation. And I think it's more complicated. And actually,
it's not the jet stream. You're putting all the observations together at all levels and, of course, globally. But I wonder if you have, if it is possible to kind of do a little more sensitive analysis to see where some observations impact the most.
Ron Gelaro's done that.
Because intuitively it would come out that, you know, the jet streams, because of this, you have this quadratic dependence of speed, should be the area that should be the most sensitive,
I thought that you have a scale factor like a density, though, right?
Yes, but there's two things about it. First, this is the energy of the error,
right,
not the energy of the jet stream.
Yeah, but if you have larger speeds, you're going, well, any error that you do is going to be larger. So it is the error is going to be larger when you have higher speed.
Okay.
That's a question related to regional scale.
Ron Gelaro and his papers with you, they have actually broken it down into northern hemisphere, southern hemisphere, extratropics. You could look probably on the web at NRL and see similar kinds of pictures broken down into different levels. In fact, I think Ron Gelaro has that too, different levels.
One of the things, though, you have to keep in mind
that the sensitivity actually is a the sensitivity in the atmosphere of sensitivity of these metrics to forecast to initial condition error is dominant in the lower atmosphere.
The lower half
of the atmosphere, below 500 millibar, is where the sensitivity is a maximum.
I see.
So that's an important point. Anyway, so here's the results from the, one of the things you can see here, QuickSCAT, we're getting a negative impact, meaning it's making the errors worse. You can see our SAT winds are a lot larger, and look at this. But this was a first test.
This is a measure sort of the relative contributions.
Yeah,
to total error.
Right.
But you also need to look at the actual magnitudes of the errors.
Well, this is a magnitude.
Yeah. One more thing I would like to understand, Ron. These errors are all evaluated as impact estimates on a 2.5 grid.
Yeah.
So, if you have the denser observation, denser grid, if your higher resolution does, and you do the denser grid of observations, you would get a different result, you think? Higher resolutions?
You wouldn't get a dramatically different result because the, unless the high resolution forecast gave an entirely different, so much better forecast or something, you're not going to see that much of a difference.
Okay. That's
something
maybe
we can
for Ricardo's features, though.
Oh, Ricardo's actually shown this,
yeah.
Ricardo actually did this in a half degree and a two degree.
Okay.
And he showed that there's a poster actually outside of his office showing that the difference is very, very minimal.
I see. Okay.
That means these evaluations depends on, depends on the vertical resolution, because your model is high vertical resolution. So for your macro view, maybe get a better infection.
Well, it depends on everything.
So
it depends on everything.
So
it depends on your...
So So you're
it depends on how you're assimilating it. It depends on your body. It depends on everything in the system.
That's one thing we can test and also. Right?
But the point is, this can be interpreted similarly to an Aussie, although it's not the same as an Aussie, and it's not giving you the same kind of relationships. But
it has something. It is
a way of breaking down
forecast, right?
You know, like for instance, we can look at this, error. And this is based on 1 day forecast error
right.
only.
Okay. Yeah. Could you do the same thing for 5 days?
No. Okay. This method will break down because of the.
After how long? After 1 day.
After 2 days, you could probably push it to 2 days, and also it may break down if you start looking at metrics that are very sensitive to moisture. That could be a problem too. But an example. This is useful. This is useful because, for instance, in this case, we see the negative here for quick scat versus in the real case being positive. So this is an indication, look at the quick scat. So this is a way to help us to focus on where it looks like the dominant problems are.
Right. Well, but the negative impact of quick scat, couldn't that be due to the a disparate impact of some other data type?
It's possible. Yeah. That's right. It's not foolproof. But even in Aussie.
Well, foolproof. I mean, it does give you clues, obviously.
Yeah.
It's not.
It's a very valuable.
The sad ones have too large of an impact.
Oh, yeah.
Aussie, so
in
both
cases.
Could be related.
Let me ask you a question. If let's say, for one example, is that errors, if you compare these two, you know, the impact, the magnitude are not the same. Can you do,
wait a second now. I don't know how different they are. I mean, this is
that's just one example, extreme.
They're two different months. I mean, they have the same calendar date, but the two atmospheres
right.
are different.
Right, so. But if you use the same, let's say if you use the same month.
They're within the uncertainty. We actually have another year, and you can see the difference.
Yeah, if this is within the interannual variability, then you're good.
Yeah. I mean, that's all you can do. We
because you know you mentioned earlier that the representative errors has not been considered, or the ops error. So can you, based on these two, tune that?
You can use this to help you tune things, right? And obviously, it's a lot faster doing this than doing 25 Aussies.
Yeah,
you may not complete your tuning. You may not be able to tune it. You still have to look at other metrics.
This is a pretty damn powerful tool.
But without that,
you can't use it.
That's a real problem.
It's a problem.
But not just for the Aussies, it's a problem in general.
I agree.
You could also do this with respect to channel. You see, for each of the errors channels that are used,
you need an adjoint.
So each of the, this is real, and this is the Aussie. So you can see, like, we're getting much more impact from some of the channels than in reality, which is probably a tuning issue.
But still, at first glance, we'll get it.
And you can see we're having problems with these moisture channels here, which are less over here. The observation counts aren't similar. So this is, it's very valuable looking at this. It's very quick. Now, the new experiment, so we made all these corrections, changed the tuning parameters. This is our new experiment. So it is not as good, actually, I think. And I think it's a matter of tuning. And we're running actually even different versions of GSI at this point. Is that right? So there's lots of different...
You mean GCM.
Of the GCM.
GCM.
Well, also the way the bias, the way the...
So the aircraft is really working for the show.
Yeah, but there's other...
Well, what are the difference this working why is
it
so big?
It's a different tuning of the errors in the simulation, in the simulated observations.
Well, we made a lot of changes in the code. Uh-huh. We ran it, and this is the result we got.
Okay.
I mean, it's just due to lots of different things,
okay.
Right? Some of the things are corrections. For example, quick scat, we're now getting
the same,
similar results. Okay.
But then the ray ops.
The ray ops. The ray ops.
Especially the.
What I did is one of the things I did was I'll show you in a moment. I reduced the I thought the errors were too large. Let's see. I forget. Anyway, this is.
But so the sum of the numbers these things don't have to sort of be conserved or anything.
No, but the sum, should match up to the difference. Should not be close to the difference that you get in that metric at hour 24. I mean,
right, because you don't want to be reducing the error more than we do in the real world. You're trying to replicate.
Okay, so that's only one.
So here's one of the problems. Here's now, and we had the same problem in the first experiment, the same problem is in the second experiment. I thought I had corrected it. I didn't correct it enough. And we have a way, so rather than running the whole experiment for a whole month, I thought of a way of doing this where we could just look at one time and make some corrections to this. So this is HERS 3 on NOAA 17, brightness temperatures, channel 7. The color tables differ again. And one of the things, the main thing to notice here between the real data and the OSSI data is that you have more OSSI data. And I looked at another time too, and we got the same result.
Why are they different? You try to duplicate the real data? Why
is a function of clouds or something?
Function of clouds, right. There is less a cloud effect.
Nature run doesn't have.
No, it's also, or the way we're using the clouds.
Mm-hmm. Well, whatever.
Sorry, it's tunable thing. So
whether
we,
you can see them or not.
So there are, there's too little effect of clouds in the OSSI data compared to the real data.
So this is whatever made it in past QC and then.
Yeah, this is after QC, that's right.
The same thinning.
Same thinning, but after QC.
Okay.
So
right.
the problem,
of course, one way to deal with that is just use the pattern in the real world.
But no, you don't want to do that because then you'll have.
Well, some people want to do that.
Yeah. But this is better. There's not a need to do that in this case.
Well, this is the problem, though.
The code was designed so you don't have to do that.
What do you mean? How do you deal with this difference then?
Well, with these numbers, I've gone through this like over a year, like every time I've been here, there's this, in the program, there's a resource file. And there are these parameters that define a probability function of the impact of clouds. And it's tunable so that you can compensate if there are if the ECMWF model has too many clouds or too little clouds in reality or whatever, you can compensate by changing these parameters. Okay?
The location of the clouds and the nature of the
Yes. So places where you have cyclones occurring, which are really dynamically active, but they're full of clouds, you don't have clear sky observations there, which I think is an important thing. And it's a matter of, we have to go in and change these numbers. There are, not accounting for the clouds properly. If I was a radiation expert, I maybe could have guessed better, more quickly, on what these numbers should be. It's based partly on these distribution diagrams. I think this is for just one day. Is that right? One time?
Two times.
Yeah. Okay. So this is two different 6-hour periods. 6-hour or 3-hour?
3 hours.
Two different 3-hour periods in the model. This is distributions of the cloud fractions that are provided in the European Center Nature Run data set for high clouds and low clouds. So this is for different latitudes here, the equator being here and the poles. And this is clear sky is over here, totally clear sky is over here and over here, and then 100% cloud cover is over here. And so you can see that there's, from looking, you look at these distributions, from these distributions, you should be able to tune those numbers to get something that's in the right ballpark. So that's an exercise that's ongoing, and we'll make another step at that. Now, your question about the O minus Fs, okay? Here's one indication of problems with O minus Fs still. This is HERS 3 on NOAA 17.
So this is bin values from O minus F. So forget about the colors at this point. And it's a histogram for, you know, this is O minus F 0, this is O minus F 1 degree, minus 1 degree. This is real data, this is the OSI. Notice the difference in scale in these two. Right, there are values here. There are many more values that are out here on the wings in the OSI data compared to the real data. And I think this has to, I think this can be dealt with by changing my deflation factor for the error covariance, essentially adding in less error in my O minus F.
Yeah, is this another ensemble over the month or something?
It's an ensemble over the month.
Including the spin-up?
Oh, no. No. Don't take that back. This is one time.
One time.
One time.
Initial time? So.
No. Just after spin-up. Sometime in the middle. Sometime in the middle of the run. But I think
it doesn't look terrible. I mean, what else do you? It does look terrible.
No, but if we want O minus, you know,
you're not going to get it perfect.
No, but we want to get. I think we'd like to have O minus Fs that are not a factor of two different. You know, when the standard deviation is 0.4 versus 0.6, we'd like to get it.
Yeah.
A little bit. We could do.
Oh,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
I think we could do that.
That's absolutely a great metric to look at, and that those if you the closer you can get them, the better off you are.
And this is done by changing these. In this error.rc file, these perk factors. So I'm thinking of changing. Right now it's 0.85, so we're putting in a pretty big error, and I think reducing it to 0.6 can bring those two pictures together. So
which was the bigger value in the previous slide?
OSI.
OSI
had the biggest standard deviation.
Yeah.
That's right.
So this will reduce the error.
The random error that you added to the radiances was too high.
And that's a matter of, you know, okay, how good
you also have a slightly larger process of bias also.
MSU-A may have more of an issue. Here's MSU-A on Aqua. Again, this is one 6-hour period. And you're seeing here the observations that actually entered into the system passing quality control. And over the land areas, you can see a different kind of distribution. And I think this has to do with the emissivity. Unfortunately, I don't know enough about how to deal with. I don't want to put in perfect emissivities because it's should be a source of problem. Anyway. I have to talk to someone about this and how to play with this better. That may be involve more than just tuning something.
But that area, MSA data is not used.
Well, I don't know. I get to see. That's when it's interesting. You say it's not used.
No, it's used.
I think it is used. It's very.
What you show is that it is used, right?
Yeah, I think it is used.
What's really encouraging about this in terms of the OSI data, though, is that over the oceans, you're getting the limb brightening that you should be getting, so that the rate of transfer is working correctly.
And the distribution over the ocean is looking. Well, you're still having a little bit too much data over the ocean, maybe, but the distribution is not that bad.
Well, the ocean is easy compared to the land.
Yeah. And I do have a precipitation effect in here.
Okay.
That's what these missing things.
Okay.
And that's another tunable thing, you know.
And this is still January.
I think this is the end. So what is next? Okay, we have to look at more diagnostics, including like what Jack suggested, which, you know, we know all these things. It's just a matter of what you can do in 2 days. Observation counts, we want to check those because there's some suspicious things going on there that may have to do with different versions, migration of one of the codes. Impact estimates, the O minus Fs. I'd like to look at anomaly correlation scores because that's a standard that people think about. So we have to retune these parameters, which I think we can do. check this microwave surface emissivity issue, which will be a little bit harder to do because that...
Now, Ron, can I ask Tom Slaughter, is EFC now assimilating AMSU data over land? For a long time, I understood that they were only doing...
I think they are.
They are, Tom, but to a limited extent. I mean, the emissivity is still a pretty tough problem there, but they are in principle being assimilated over land, yes.
Okay.
And, okay, so I'm expecting that the next experiment, including looking at it, that we can complete sometime early January. And at that point, I think that if people want to start playing with stuff, that I'm hoping that it'll be usable by other people as a good enough OSSI for them, baseline OSSI for them to start playing with. And of course, you know, it could be when we go to the summer. I mean, maybe things are going to be entirely different, somewhat different.
Your next experiment is going to be that same experimental period.
The same period, except different parameters. Mostly different parameters, less changes to the code. There's another change also that's going on. I've restructured the code so that we can, the radiance simulation code, so that we can use NPI within the code itself. So rather than like Michiko running on all the different processors and the script, you run on one script, but you just say you want to run, you know, 10 different processors. And if you run 10 different processors, you should get a speed up of almost 10 times. And so it would just be an NPI version. And it won't be a memory hog because all the memory will be of the fields that you're reading in will be stored in one place, not duplicate copies of that. So the only thing that's being NPI'd is really the CRTM call because that's where all the computation is. All the storage is in one place. All the I.O. is in one place. All the computations in another place. So it's a nice code for actually separating out the issues. And there's a guy working on this at NASA, and I don't know, we should hear from him sometime soon, I presume. It's fairly, to someone who knows how to do MPI, which I've never done before, it should be fairly easy. And because I did restructure it to make that easier. So that code is also available, and at some point, Michiko, we should send you the new codes.
Yeah.
Most of the, you know, there's been a lot of little changes, and I don't anticipate as much change going to the next version.
Well, now, it seems like, in terms of developing this code, I mean, it seems like you're tuning errors and things, which are added on top of perfect data.
Great job.
Are you changing the perfect data from time to time? I mean, it seems like can make a run through the whole period, all the perfect data, and then fill in the errors.
The word changes
as
to
a separate
example, the QuickSCAP. The QuickSCAP problem, the fact that we were getting these negative impacts versus positive, that had to do with the level of the winds. I mistakenly thought that the QuickSCAP algorithm provided winds that were supposed to be effectively at 20 meters. But it's 10 meter. No, 10. I forget. Not 10 meter. I have to be careful.
Well, okay.
Anyway, there was a difference
once
there.
You get
so
that
I had to go and
out.
Change.
Yeah.
I had to go and change things. I had an emissivity issue in the first experiment with the way I was doing emissivity for the AMSU. I had to go and change the code. So the change from experiment 1 to experiment 2 was mostly in the code rather than the tuning stuff. The change from 2, although it was also simultaneously changing
the
tuning.
I guess my question is, are you going to make a set of data that's perfect data without the errors?
Oh.
Because that would seem to be useful to other people.
What we do is we first make observations that are perfect. And then before we run,
But in terms of making data available to other people who want to use it,
We would probably do that, and we would
have different representative errors and so on.
Right.
It seems like a set of perfect.
That would make sense.
Would make sense.
And we would give that, and then the code to make the errors.
and recommendations
you know, everybody,
on what the
different people might have different ways of looking, making errors, right?
So
everybody makes
errors. Well, except if you're going to start from yourself, then you have to write all your buffer codes and everything else. This is a
you have to process the buffer data anyway. Just making errors is a small part of this process. Adding errors is a small part of it.
It's very fast. It's very fast.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of different ways.
But to write all the code, of course, to do it.
Well, you have to have the code to read the data, no matter what it looks like, right?
This is Dan Birkin here. I just want to interrupt on this error issue. It sounds to me like there's a discussion going on about using two different kinds of error representation in the runs, and I would recommend that we stick to one type of error, maybe error system, because if we diverge from that, we could wind up having experimental results that are just very difficult to really compare and use together.
Well, the problem is different systems have different levels of representative error.
Who's speaking?
Yes, it can.
Who's speaking? Hello?
It's Dan Birkenhauer.
It can change, for instance. If you change from one resolution to another, it's conceivable that you'll have to put in, for instance, let's say you went to T511, something like that, right? That would have almost no spatial representatives error in your interpolations, okay? Whereas in reality, there still would be interpolation errors. So the amount of representatives error you may have to add may change as you go from one resolution to another. That would just have to be investigated. But what we would do is we would provide people probably the error-free observations, and then the code, and also the error, the table, to generate the errors. So if you run on your own machine, because you have a different random number generator, you may actually get different specific values for each specific observation, but the statistics.
Errors, that's right.
But the statistics should be similar. But all the code will be there, of course, for reading in all these things and for writing them all out.
The scale that you're running.
The statistics should be set.
That depends. I mean, if the representative error is different, the statistics are different.
No, the statistics that it generates should be the same. Is the point? Because
what statistics?
My error code, you specify certain statistics that you would like to have it come out with, and it will come out with those statistics. The actual
statistics will be different, though, in different systems.
No. The statistics you want may be different, but the statistics...
That's what I'm talking about.
I know. I'm saying the statistics that it will come out with will be identical, though, if you give it the same parameters.
Yeah. Well, we would hope so, yeah.
Just off the second one.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you want to say something?
So that's it.
You are.
Oh, yeah, I was asking, I mean, according to your presentation, you said that by January 2009, the data will be available for people to use. So in that case, I can calculate the correlations between 6-hour forecast error and analysis error by using OSI data. Is that true?
Which data? You're talking data about...
No, it looks like he has already got a lot of experiments here and the software is... You asked a question to estimate the
have to decide then whether you're going to run your GSI yourself. I mean, you're talking about there's lots of other steps involved, right?
So what we're trying to get is the true analysis error, which we think also
is
a good source to get the analysis error.
Then you have to make an analysis. And to make an analysis, you have to run GSI.
No, but it looks like you got a lot of them here.
Well, unless you want to use our system and look at the errors within our system.
There's GCM and their version of the analysis and everything else.
But that doesn't represent the real analysis error in our system.
It's going to be different if you use a different model and a different analysis.
The code is the same.
You know the five center analysis error are different.
Yeah, different models make different errors.
You just have to decide.
All your results are based on GFS, right?
Not GFS.
No, they're using a model.
It's a different model.
A different model. Okay.
It is a similar code, but even at this point, not identical code, where the codes diverged about a year and a half ago. So actually, the version of GSI that we're running is different.
It's actually
you use GSI, right? GSI depends on the model. You don't use the GFS model?
No, we have our own model.
Okay.
We have our own model. The only thing that's similar is the GSI code.
Okay. The CRTM code.
And the CRTM code.
Okay,
the CRTM codes are probably closer to each other, but the GSI codes are, the GSI codes, as I said, are a year and a half apart, although maybe for the observations.
Pretty similar, I think.
For
probably
the observations we're using.
The two models are.
So if we, you mean, if I want to get a loss estimate, I have to run what do you need here with GFS model?
Well, you have to decide. Either, unless you want to look at our system, you can look at our system. If you want to look at your system, you look at your system.
You can vote on NASA.
You know, you just have to decide. I'm saying there's steps that you have to go through to use it. It just depends what you want to do.
How the representative error is being generated at for the GSI? Do you know that?
What do you mean, how it's generated? You don't generate the error.
There's a procedure that, what's it called, for SEA or something?
Can we follow the same thing? Because the
instrument, there's a paper. I can send it to you. If you want to read it.
The instrument error, you don't touch it properly because you can't change
it. They run it and look at the penalties that come out and sort of reverse engineer the observation error out of it.
I thought all you look at is R.
Yeah, how it's R. But R has
do you break it up into two pieces? But you don't.
No,
the tables, it's only R.
That's right. Any analysis is just a fault. There's ways to retune the op errors to try to account for this once she was done with it.
Yeah. The representative error, right?
No, she sent me
but
a paper that describes
just,
it. I can send
you
it.
You still just assign a single number.
Right, right. Right.
It's a couple
but
of
that's a combination of two numbers.
Yes. Yeah. But all of, you know, and the results only depend on that combination.
Let him talk.
Yes.
So basically, this is really adding that sum term
right.
to the observation.
Yeah. But you can have a single, you know, like the first part you can, I assume that you know the instrument error.
All well, this, let's say you have some idea of it. I mean,
roughly speaking.
That was provided though, right?
Yeah, I mean, there you can use the same instrument error.
So you use
error.
R,
that's
you know,
not a
that
bad
is
idea.
Right now in the table, then you minus instrument error, you get estimate of the representative error. That's whatever you put in by reverse engineering.
Well, the problem is in the simulated data that there isn't the error isn't right.
Yeah. Right.
You need to sort of invent the error.
Exactly. Right. And what I'm saying is that
that's the difficult part.
For the OSC is actually if there's a way that you can follow in the real situation.
I agree with that. I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
That we should use that procedure to reverse engineer the observation error and compare it.
What you need to do then
compare
is
compare it to the real case and have them come out roughly the same.
So you don't need to care about the instrument.
No, the question is
You compare about the total.
You have the problem is to figure that out. Most of it is guesswork by people. And sometimes it's optimistic guesswork.
Right.
People who develop instruments like to tell you how accurate their instruments are. I mean, it's the truth. And they're always underestimating what the instrument error is.
Right, and we don't use it directly anyway. In the simulation.
If the models are the same, you know, in these two ones, you know, one is the real data, the other is OSI. If the models are the same, should the representative error be the same?
If the model is the same.
I don't know what you mean, but same as what?
You see, yeah,
the
right.
Resolution the same, right?
Well, different models make different error, have different
representative issues. We are comparing two things. One is the real experiment, right? The other is the OSI experiment.
Oh yeah, the representative
with
error.
With the same, you know, resolution.
Same model,
you
same resolution, right. Same representative error. And that's why you look at the real case. Yeah, that's why you look at the real. You want the representative error to be the same in the same model with the same resolution. So that's why you look at the real case
to judge
how well you've done adding representative error to the simulated data.
I think the representative error may not be the same. If they are the same, then you are running.
If you make it the same, then you've got a system that's calibrated correctly.
You have to be careful when you guys are talking about the same thing.
Same.
Same in some by some definition.
Same means that the same table.
Same basic amount of representative error, representativeness issues between your data and your model. That's what you want to end up with. to get, you want a result in your OSSI that's comparable to a result in the real world. The problem with the real world is we don't have, you know, instrument X flying around somewhere. We want to see what instrument X would do in the real world. So we have to invent a separate world to test that in. But we want the separate world, in all other respects, to be pretty similar to the real world.
Yeah, we know that, but how? What's the best way of getting?
Well, that's what we've been talking about. We need metrics to make that judgment.
So why should get a lot of
The question is, what are the best metrics to use? What is the most direct way to get to that point where you feel confident in your that your simulated world is good enough to make experiments in, that you can have some faith in? That's what we've been talking about.
One question is that, you know, the Ron's figures, the left, let's see, the left is from the real data, and then you have all the bars.
Yeah, that's like the error contribution.
Right, and then on the
error
right
reduction
side,
you know, one day forecast
right.
from different data types.
Yeah, let me finish. So the first one is that you have a constraint of the total, you know, total areas of all the
absolutely,
bars.
Absolutely.
Then we have the constraint one, okay?
Yeah.
And the second constraint is the ratio. Do you constrain the ratio or not?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert on that particular.
Okay,
method.
Then we can continue to Nikki's talk. Then we can get back to that kind of discussion maybe next time. We can
quick, talk. Quick question.
Yes?
For those who are on the telephone line listening to this, have you been hearing beeps as we have occasionally about one every minute or two that covers over the voice, or is it just us?
We're hearing it here at NOAA, so. And
well, not every minute, kind of every half hour or something.
Oh, no, more often than that.
Okay.
But I just wanted to know if anybody else is hearing it and asking the question, because it could be our line alone, but I guess it isn't. That's enough. Let's get going.
Okay.
See you.
So this is Mickey. Can you all hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, if you hear beep, that's the thing beeping. It doesn't beep in the next slide. They're pretty loud. This is a presentation, I think it was called Purvey November 20th Calibration or something like that. It was kind of large. So I'm going to do the beginning part of this, which is looking at our calibration efforts with data denial from real archive data, and then Juan Fu is going to talk about the solution. So if we go to the first slide, I think it just says that. Second slide. Yeah. So moving on to the third slide. This does the calibration, so we're doing a series of data denial runs. We're doing them first with the archive data from 2005 and 2006, and we're running for two different month periods. The first one that we've done is for July to the middle of August 2005, period of about 6 weeks. And then later on, we're going to run also with the real data, a winter month, which has not yet been determined. And we're also going to do these same things with the simulated data when said simulated data is fully available. And we've been doing the data denial for RAOP, M2A, GOES, aircraft. Those four are complete, and we're currently running the data denial for AIRS. Each one of these runs take on the order of the median of 10 days. There's a pretty big range. The shortest one took 3 or 4 days, but some of them have taken about 2 weeks. This is a function of the queue time on vapor, and it's not anything that we can control.
What resolution are you running?
T126 so far. So if we move on to the next one,
60.
The first slide with plots on it. There's four plots. This is the
RMS error between the analysis for the data mal experiment versus the analysis for experiment in between all of the data. And this is the global mean. I have also done some of these broken down in various regions, but we're not showing you here.
Error of what?
I'm sorry?
What error?
Is that like O minus A or something?
No, it's the analysis for the data mal experiment minus the analysis Nature. For the experiment, and which includes all of the
okay.
data.
So, okay, so it's a difference between two different analyses.
Yes. So these four are all for the zonal wind U. There are four different levels being shown. The white in all of these is the Rayov denial experiment. The green is the AMP2A data denial. The kind of yellowish squares is the GOES. And the magenta is the aircraft. So pretty much for most of these, the results are fairly similar to the sensitivity experiments that have already been done with that adjoint model. The Rayov and the AMP2A tend to have the strongest impact. The aircraft is somewhere in the middle, and that does vary with level. You can see at the 300 millibar, which is the upper left spot, the aircraft has a pretty strong impact, but not so much at the lower levels. And the GOES has considerably less impact than the other ones. So we have this for a couple different variables. If we go to the next slide, we have it for temperature, which is also, again, pretty similar. And we also have it for the specific humidity on the following slide. For N2A, so particularly well at lower levels. And finally, there's a slide with the two plots that has the surface pressure and the precipitable water.
Initial time is small.
There seem to be two sort of spikes.
That's because they start with the same.
They start from zero. The first one occurring around August 4th. The second one occurring around August 11th. The August 4th spike, we think, is due to some corruption in the archive data. We had problems acquiring the August 4th data from the archive. The original data was, the files were corrupt. We retrieved from a different source last summer. A replacement for this day, but we believe that the replacement data, the prep buffer file, is missing some of the observations we think from the RAYOP. We haven't completely gone into this yet, but that seems to be the cause of the first spike. The second spike seems to be real, not a problem with the data. If we go to the following slide, this is showing from August 11th, which is in the middle of the second spike. This is the 850 millibar Q, difference between the AMP2A data denial and the run that included all of the data. And if you note off of the west coast of South America, there's a really big anomaly. That really big anomaly appears during this spike and then goes away. So my suspicion is that the second spike is actually a real phenomenon. The first one is an artifact of data being not quite right. So our plan is to just kind of extract the August 4th spike when we're doing any kind of statistics, and maybe drop off August 5th as well, just for...
Are you saying that the August 4th is different between the two different, the control with everything and the denial experiments, or what?
We're saying that the August 4th, the data for all of the experiments, including the data, the experiment that included all of the data, that some of the data is missing.
Well, but you're comparing the control with the denial experiments with all the same data set, right?
Yes, for all of the data, including the control, is missing some of what appears to be the Rayov data for August 4th only. So that's causing this problem, well, that spike. So we can try to get...
Well, but the data, but the radiosondes is missing in both cases, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, the first time when they download the data from the archive, the HPSS storage, the data cannot be used by the GSI. So, Jack, you give us the directory, so you can pull out the data.
the data, I think the ANSI data is there, but we look at the data file, if we found out all the prep buffer file, there's no data ingested into GSI. We check the number of outcomes there.
It's missing all the wind
pressure.
Yeah, it some data is ingested from the prep buffer file, but huge swaths of data are missing just from that one day.
Yeah, I noticed few missing days, so if that could cause big difference.
Well, but the two analyses have the same deficit.
Yeah.
And you are comparing the two analyses. Now, the, it's possible that
whether
make a huge
driven
difference
by that
between the two analyses.
Missing day?
I don't know.
Well, we're just going to ditch that day. I mean, if you look at the spots, the difference seems to asymptote after about a week and a half. And if we just leave off that one day, it's not going to impact
right.
at all. And we don't want to because they take so long. So I don't think just ditching that day or day and a half is really going to have a big impact.
Yeah.
I think September, there are a few days.
Well, I think those, Yanfu, I think those data sets that I recovered from someplace else have all the data in them, pretty sure.
Yeah, with the new one you sent us, so I haven't...
Yeah, because I think I got those from the Run History Archive before it went bad.
Yeah, actually, what we plan to do is, only for that day, we use the new data set you sent us, so we use that one to redo the analysis for that day only. So
yeah.
We're not going to repeat everything for the whole...
Okay, well, that probably explains the spike, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
We will investigate on
that. So, if we go on to the next slide, the impact of data now, the five-day forecast...
No, these are all real.
They're
real.
Written up there on the
this
top.
This is real analysis. One control
is
all the data. Right. And then
no synthetic data. It's all archived real data.
One data type removed. Right.
So this is showing as a function of the forecast time. At the bottom, this is the Rayov data denial experiment. The 3 inch null bar you win. And this is the forecast versus the analysis from the experiment, the control experiment with all the data. And I'm showing this here because this is what pretty much all of the fields for all of the DNA experiments look like at all levels, which is the largest impact is seen at the analysis, and after about 24 hours, the impact of the data denial on the forecast drops off precipitously. Zero, if you notice, is not at the bottom of this plot. Zero is in the middle of the y-axis. So most of the forecast impact is in the first 24 hours. It drops off really low, and then after about 72 hours, you start seeing the chaotic, the chaotic differences, just from numerical differences in the forecast. And this is showing an ensemble. All the blue lines, each one is a different forecast. It's only the 0 and 12Z forecast. We're not showing the 6 and 18Z, which we did not run out very long. We only ran 5-day forecasts for 0 and 12Z. And this is leading off the first 2 weeks because that's when it's an adjustment. So this is mid-July to mid-August, those forecasts, all of them. So that's why we're mostly looking at the analysis difference since the forecast impact seems to be pretty free.
Regarding the 5-day scores, the European Center has done a number of experiments where they have removed big chunks of data, either geographically or by data type, and they get similar kind of result at 5 days.
So that means that the Europeans, they also have a daily impact on the first day, and after that, the daily impact are gone, is that right?
I think you have to be careful of saying it's gone, because obviously,
it's
yeah. I think you have to be careful about interpreting the experiments. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, I'm surprised to know the Europeans have the same problem.
Yeah, they do. Because nature and fast to...
No, no, not the that's nothing to do with nature. The forecast system, the operational system. They've been doing experiments.
Yeah, but...
Where they take out all the Pacific data. Everything over the Pacific. And at day 5, they get the same forecast skill over Europe as without all that data. So it's interesting.
So the analysis, the...
If you look at the breakdown with region, the greatest analysis impact and forecast impact tends to be in the tropics. And this is for July, and the greatest impact tend to be over the West Pacific, the monsoon area over India, and sometimes over Africa, which is also a monsoon area. And then those get damped out pretty quickly. And then the later difference that you see around 72 hours, that's 120 hours, that tends to be the mid-latitude difference that's picking up. But the initial ones, the strongest impact is pretty much in the tropics for most of these fields and most of the levels. So on our schedule for this, we're currently running the final ones of the July real data case. We're running the errors right now. We're hoping that we'll finish by the end of November, although this one is really going very, very slowly right now. The queue is extremely sluggish on vapor. And then we're going to make a decision depending on the availability of the simulated data, whether we move on to the real data for the winter months or whether we start working on doing the simulated data denial experiment. But we can't do that until we have all the odds available for a long enough period with the error and with everything. So we'll see.
Aren't you going to run with some perfect data as initially?
I think so. I think probably we start with the perfect data first and then we gradually add in the error for different instruments.
I think you had. I think all the perfect data is ready for July, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know about errors. The data that we made earlier. We made data 2 years ago.
Following your email, I know the data is there. So right now, we are just testing data. I'm going to talk about that next. Okay, so right now I'm taking over. So I'm talking about, so that Nick mentioned, so we're going to do the mixed decision. So the real data is denial experiment for the winter one, or we go to do the synthetic data. So as Jack mentioned, the data is available. So that really depends on the test. So if our test with the data are fine, so probably we can go ahead with the synthetic data denial experiment for the summer one. Yeah, the next slide. So the next slide you can see the title is the synthetic radiance. So we're going to start from there.
Which one?
Yeah, in the
this slide, so I'm going to talk about some of the basic very the beginning test using the Ron Ryokos, the satellite radiance data. So actually, Fishical used the code to generate the synthetic satellite radiance data. So I know Fishical.
Well, none of my stuff.
Is the amateur data.
None of the stuff that I gave Michiko should be used for any experiments.
Just for testing.
No, actually,
with
that kind of test,
if
the CSI can take the data from
it. Yeah. But all you have to do then is run one time step.
That's right.
Yeah.
So actually, I started to run because of the global para system I run. So we started with the forecast. We do the forecast from 12Z for 6 hours. After that, I do the code the CSI, do the data simulation at that point. So what I'm going to show you, only show you the analysis at the 18Z. So what I'm saying here is that we're using the version 1. So actually, Ron provided the Michiko generated readings data on vapor. So we're just trying to see if the GSI can take the data from the air or not. So I'm going to show you some of the results of the synthetic air. So actually, the backup, so Jack Woolen and Tongzhu also have the other data sets, the other set of the satellite region data with amateur data. So if we, at the ESRL, we have a deadline. So we have to make the calibration work done by next, probably July or the next summer, in order to meet the UAS, the plan. So we have to do it very fast. So that's why we think if we have a problem with the wrong code, we can turn around using Jack and Fungzu's stuff. So next slide. So this slide, I'm going to show you only the 18Z analysis difference. So difference using the synthetic conventional plot errors and the other one only using the conventional.
So we compare the difference at 200 millibar and also 500 millibar. On the left hand side, I show the temperature at 200 millibar, the differences between the one with the air versus the one without air. On the right hand side, the temperature on the 500 millibar. So any comments on this slide? So, you know, any comments on these differences? Probably not. Okay.
This is synthetic simulator.
Pardon me?
This is a simulator experiment.
Yeah, all the data are synthetic data. So we use the conventional synthetic of GX
or the compare it.
And so we use the air in the Michiko you gave us.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Okay. So the polar air is big.
Lulu, last question? Okay, next slide.
It gets colder as you go up.
Okay, next slide, I'm going to show you the difference. So actually, on the right hand, not the difference, I show you the total field. On the left hand side, I show you the one, the temperature field with the air at 500 millibar. On the right hand side, I show you the one without air. So that means only using the conventional object formula. So that's using the synthetic observation generated from the natural T511. Okay, if you do not have a question, I go to the next slide.
I don't get
next slide show you the differences on the specific humidity.
Yangfu, can you explain what you say T with and without airs? That's synthetic or that's real?
Oh, synthetic. I'm showing here everything is synthetic.
I see.
On the left hand side, I run the synthetic observation conventional plus the synthetic IR. On the right hand side, only the synthetic the conventional without the air.
So the air changes the tropics by like 5 degrees or something.
So the difference from analysis?
Well, no difference.
It's just full field. Full field of 500 millibars with and without air.
The total field of the analysis.
You can't see.
The temperature field of 500 millibars.
That's right.
This is not brightness temperature, right?
Is it snapshot?
Or this is brightness temperature.
This is total
18 hour.
This is sensible temperature? Virtual temperature?
No, this is the
TB, brightness temperature.
TB, yeah, right.
Okay.
Brightness temperature?
No.
Not brightness temperature. No, this is the 500 millibar temperature.
This is sensible or virtual temperature.
Hi, Yuanfu. This is Zhao and I just asked, what's your data available?
No, that's
available.
That's not allowed.
The topic of available.
TGB.
Actually, it's a very good question. Has the data itself. Yeah. So actually, I dumped a lot of data from Michiko's the data directory and ingested it into the GSI. So that's what I did. I haven't got a chance to look at the data itself yet.
So we don't know which is right.
No. But they only saw the impact.
Okay. Well, he's just showing the impact of
but
the
main thing is right now they can run the core.
Well, it depends what else he's running though. With a conventional.
You mean what other data is there?
Yeah.
What other satellite data is there, for instance? I assume all
this
conventional
is only
data.
Probably none.
For me, I only have the test.
Probably nothing because there is no errors. He doesn't have any synthetic errors. This is just conventional data plus some errors, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no other satellite data.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, and Aqua MC is included.
Actually, I'm going to.
Probably not.
The time is we are going to hear, we're going to do one by one, trying to, for the synthetic.
Depend on
trying to check all the data format is still suitable for GSI.
Okay, he's testing these only with air.
He started from the same background, or from the same initial state, right?
Oh, that's right.
So we could probably see more if we had the difference, the impact of the analysis, right?
I showed you the difference earlier. Right.
Previous slide.
So the differences by errors at 200 millibar and 500 millibar.
That's the one.
Those are analysis increments?
Yeah, analysis increments, yes.
Okay, I see. Okay, sorry.
18Z.
18Z, yes, that's right.
Yeah, could you make what kind of difference?
Analysis increments.
What, Michiko, what
you're
saying?
Yeah, it's when you say difference, you can just say difference between what.
Yeah, the difference.
Could you add
the with the air, the minus the one with all the air.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's keep going on the next slide. I'm going to talk about the difference in the specific humidity.
Okay,
400 millibar, 500 millibar. There's also difference in the air. So
the one with air minus the one without air.
I see.
Aren't you surprised how small, considering there's nothing in the southern hemisphere except for the sat winds?
With and without air, yeah.
Okay.
Well.
Night flight.
It is small.
Night flight, I show you the total field, the total specimen field. On the left-hand side, the 500 meter bar with air. On the right-hand side, without air.
See, I don't know what the initial condition is. If it's, is this May 2nd or something? May 1st, 12Z?
No,
July?
May 1st.
Well, see, the initial state is looks just like the data. So, not going to see a lot of impact, eh?
I use the May 1st, 12Z.
Right. So, I mean, that initial state looks just like the data.
But then you run it.
Data plus a 6-hour forecast.
Yeah, that's what we have to check
for data.
Well, this is just, you know, you're demonstrating that you can analyze the data.
Right. So the next time we're going to do whatever we need done. So we're trying to study the impact.
Right, over a month.
So right now, I'm just trying to show you the data can be, so the data generated by Mythical is workable for the GI box. So we can.
Perfect.
Yeah. That's the only thing we can do by this moment.
Yeah, so that's good because it didn't happen before. It's using
Falcon. After air, probably goes to air. After that, I think probably we need to wait for Michigan for the AMSU data. So if the AMSU data cannot be available sooner, we probably have to turn around to use Jack and produce sideline reading data.
Well, Nothing that Michiko has generated with my stuff should be used in any real experiment.
I know.
I can redo it, so you keep this code.
These are not real experiments. I know. But I think the data that Tong Su made from this array of spots from the real world is good for calibrating the system. I'm sorry. I just think it's adequate for calibrating the system.
Yeah, so
and it's worthwhile taking a look at.
Ron, you think it's not appropriate to use the current data set? So, because we have a deadline, so...
Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you have a deadline or not. You've got to do, you don't want to confuse everybody in the world by going and presenting stuff and saying you've done things and with stuff that is known to not be appropriate.
So we're not going to show
we are demonstrating.
What you can do is make sure that everything's in place so that when the stuff is available, you can do what's necessary to do. That's the best thing to do.
That's what we are doing.
Make sure, that's what we do. You know, if we're waiting, somebody's on vacation, things aren't working right? The code isn't working right. So we don't go and just run the code anyway, and, oh, it doesn't matter, we're on vacation, we're in deadline. We wait for them, but in the meantime, we prepare what other things that we can do, so that when the person comes back, when the stuff then is available, that we can do things properly, we can do it. I mean, that's how you have to think on these problems.
That's right.
But this one, the arthritis is sure the data is correct. Before it was wrong, you know, that it's not read correctly. Because that's kind of things we have to
take. So let me ask
what data are you talking about?
Well, as data I produced. So there are some slight difference in GML and NSEP data set. That's why I'm getting stuck in, you know, that kind of thing.
Wrong. So your code is the version 2, P2 version of the standard region code. So is that acceptable for the RC calibration or not? Or we need reading longer?
I think
we need probably...
What you need to have are the parameters, the tunable parameters. You need the tuned parameters to do real, meaningful experiments.
Yeah, actually, are you going to do...
And that's what we're working on.
So you're working on it, okay. So that means, actually that's right. So in that case, what I'm showing here, or probably the next couple months, what we're going to do is just test all the data formats. So we're not going to do any calibration without your new code or new tuned parameters.
I think
is that clear?
I think that may be the best thing to do.
Okay. Well, except you might have to retune those parameters to use them in a different system.
GSI, right?
Yeah, you're going to have to just see how they come out.
Yeah. So
anyway, I think the initial set of synthetic data experiments will be done with perfect data in any case.
Well, we're not doing any experiments with perfect data.
Well, we're not talking about you. We're talking
about I know. I'm just saying because we're trying to maximize our results. So if we spend the time doing an experiment with the, we're trying to maximize the result. What makes most sense to do on a certain time scale, and that's our goal. We've plotted out what makes most sense to get the maximum result at the end, rather than doing lots of experiments and running things and making a year's worth of data that we know is no good.
Okay.
Why do that?
I don't know, Ron.
Okay, so let me proceed to the next slide. Okay, the next slide, so actually what I showed you before does show you the difference, the air's impact, the synthetic air's impact. So I'm going to show you the analysis against the natural, see how much the improvement you get with the air. So on the left-hand side, I show you the temperature field with the air against the differences between the analysis versus the natural. On the right-hand side, I show you the temperature without the without air against the natural one. So
green is good, right?
Slightly improvement over the hollow area. Okay. Next slide, I show you the same thing at 500 millibar.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so the results show here is just to show you we are right now have the capability to ingest the whatever data Michiko provided us. So
right, and that that data looks fairly good against the nature run.
Yeah, it's consistent.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm done here.
Okay,
thank you.
So see you all in a month.
That's right. December 4th, two weeks time.
Yeah, I won't be here then, but I'll come at the next one.
Next meeting is December 4th, right?
December 4th is next meeting.
Okay, thank you.
And there are one presentation I prepared and then for the time available with Aaron, this one, Future Nature and V8. And I'm here, that one is Orestes. I want Orestes to think about what...
here?
Yeah. For this paper, I want to think about what... I want to ask one thing. And the good metrics for the future nature run. And the other things, Ron, question Ron is, I didn't get much about GO6 information. And that's something SGRIN spoke up about this. But I didn't hear from Mark.
GO6.
GEOS.
As a potential nature run?
Yeah, because people start talking about...
I've been suggesting that.
At some point, I'm going to do experiments with a nature run using the identical model, or as close to the identical model as I'm using in the assimilation, whatever.
Yeah, this is something.
Whatever model that is.
So, are you planning to run a nature run?
No. That's for identical twin experiment, right?
I haven't thought about it. Probably what I'd like to do is have the models close together so I have no minimal model error.
I see.
So here I'm talking about the people talking about high resolution nature run. I want people to stop going off to mesoscale model or anything like this. What is available, I want to keep listing.
My purpose is I just like to do a data assimilation experiment, a simulation, where I have minimal model error.
Yeah.
To just see what the difference is between having model error and not having model error.
Right.
Yeah. That can be done by European Center using current nature run as well.
Well, in my case, I can't. I need the same model as I'm doing with my assimilation. I only have one model available to me to do the assimilation.
Yeah, okay. All right.
But that would probably be GEOS-5. It depends. Whatever model is hooked up at that point into the assimilation system, that's what I'll use.
Okay. So thank you very much for...
But I'll probably only do it for a month.
Yeah.
Not for a year.
No. You don't need a month. Yeah.
So, Michiko, next time we are going to discuss and this new, the future possible Neturan.